I had no idea what father would have to say for himself, or what he might do should I enrage him. The only thought mildly comforting me was knowing my brother would be there, and he'd allow no harm to befall me. I wished I had the same confidence in father, but he was past the point of sanity now. Perhaps no amount of reasoning would convince him to hand himself over to detective inspectors. Perhaps I should have gone with Thomas and fetched a constable. I heard a utensil clank onto a plate, the sound muffled from this side of the door. It was too late to run for assistance now. I placed my hand on the doorknob, allowing myself a few breaths to pull my emotions together. Falling apart before I even confronted him wouldn't do. If I were to show how scared I was, he'd sense it, lunging for my jugular, no doubt. I removed my hand from the door, holding it about my throat instead. He could very well murder me, as Mr. Robert James Lees claimed he would. I blinked several times, regaining my composure. How foolish I didn't bring a weapon of my own. Why would I think he'd spare his own daughter? Thank the stars Thomas wasn't around, pointing out everything I was doing terribly wrong. Maybe I should creep back down the hall and run out into the night. I was without help and without anything to defend myself. An image of Mother's sweet smile flashed before my eyes. Father had inadvertently destroyed her. Weapon or not, I'd not allow him to do the same to me. I squared my shoulders, steeling myself for the battle I was about to encounter. It was now or never, and I'd procrastinated long enough. I turned the knob and threw the door open, striding inside like a dark angel sweeping down to deliver justice, rage burning behind my eyes as the door shook the wall upon contact. "Hello, Fav!" Words faltered as the footman dropped a plate, its blue and white pieces shattering across the empty table. I fisted my hands on my hips, as if he were responsible for all the problems in the world, too incensed to feel guilt as he cringed away from my aggressive stance. "Where are my father and brother?"
"Gone, miss," he swallowed hard. "Said they won't be back for supper."
Of all the miserable luck in the universe, I rubbed the bridge of my nose. Of course the night I decide to confront the beast, he'd be packed up and gone. He probably sensed the noose being tied. I realized our footman was still staring, mouth agape. Perhaps he was more afraid of my ensemble of death. He hadn't seen me in my black breeches and riding habit yet, and that, mixed with my raven locks, probably painted quite the portrait of darkness. "Did they say when they'd return?" He shook his head.
"No, miss, but I got the feeling he meant they'd be gone for most of the evening. Lord Wadsworth said to leave the door unlocked and dim the lights when we settled into bed."
I gripped my fists tighter. If father did anything to hurt Nathaniel, I'd rip him limb from limb before the Queen had a chance to order it done herself. I relaxed my grip slightly. No need to worry our footman any more than he was. "I'll be in father's study awaiting his arrival," I said, my tone cold and unfamiliar, even to my own ears. "I do not wish to be disturbed under any circumstances. In fact, it'd be wise for you all to retire early. Have I made myself clear then?"
Yes, miss. I shall pass your wishes along to the other servants."
I quickly exited the room and ran down the hall, not wanting anyone to see how badly I was shaking. I hated being rude, but that was so much better than having their deaths stain my hands. If they were all in their rooms, they'd be safe. I tried the door to father's study. It was unlocked. This time I wasn't sneaking around. Father would come straight here, as he did every evening. So I pushed the door open and lit some lamps around the gloomy space. I scanned the forbidden room. It seemed much less intimidating now than it had weeks ago. His desk no longer appeared to be the imposing monster I once thought it to be. Now it just looked like a large old desk that had witnessed too many terrible things. The familiar scent of sandalwood and cigars that accompanied father also didn't send my heart into spastic drumming. I welcomed it. Let it call his ghost to me now, I dared. My attention drifted over objects passed down in our family for generations, landing on the large, open tome. Recalling the cryptic message from my mother, thanks to the spiritualist, I strode over to it, curious. There, Exactly where he said it had be was the locket from the photograph. I swallowed disbelief down. Turned out Mr. Robert James Lees was no fraud. How tragic Scotland Yard didn't listen to him. Perhaps they could have stopped Father a long time ago. I bent closer, reading the pages of the book that were carefully left open, trying to understand the significance of the passage. The book was Paradise Lost by John Milton. Upon himself, horror and doubt distract his troubled thoughts, and from the bottom stir the hell within him, for within him hell he brings, and round about him, nor from hell one step no more than from himself can fly by change of place. Now conscience wakes despair that slumbered, wakes the bitter memory of what he was, what is, and what must be worse. Of worse deeds, worse suffering must ensue. My eyes strayed to the underlined from hell part, recalling the title of the letter sent from the Ripper all too clearly. The way it was underlined looked like slashes, angry and tormented. Any residual doubts I might have harbored about Father were gone. He was comparing his gruesome acts to Satan's in Paradise Lost. What a twisted manifesto! The significance of the passage hit me at once. It was where Satan questioned his rebellion. The moment he realized hell would always be with him because he couldn't escape the hell of his own mind. Satan would never find peace or heaven, no matter how physically close he got, because forgiveness would always be out of reach. He could never change his mind, therefore hell would be eternal. Acknowledging that, he turns evil into good, committing worse acts in the name of his version of good. I stared at the heart-shaped locket once belonging to Mother. Was this all for her, then? I carefully removed the glass case protecting both book and necklace. I'd not allow Father to use her as an excuse to do evil any more. I placed the locket around my neck, feeling the comfort of it resting above my own heart. Unable to be near the book, I walked over to the obscenely large portrait hanging on the wall. I still hated the sadistic-looking man with the proud stance of a murderer, the bear he'd slain limp at his feet. I peered at the brass placard near the bottom. It was smudged with dirt. I reached over, about to scrub it off with my sleeve, when the painting lurched inward. I yanked my hand back, nearly jumping out of my skin. What in the name of God is... Once my heart stopped ramming against my ribs, I took a step closer. The portrait had been concealing a hidden passage. An ice-cold breeze blew up from the darkened stairs, lifting wayward strands of hair about my face like the serpents on Medusa's head. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. A curved stone staircase was there, waiting to be explored, or yelling at me to turn away. It was hard to decipher what the gaping mouth was imploring. I stood, one foot over the threshold of the unknown, the other planted in the relative safety I knew. A terrible feeling stole over my bones, forcing them to clatter together in dread. This had to be the place where Jack the Ripper's prizes were kept. Indecision clawed at me, confusing my better judgment. I stepped back, closing the portrait. I should run to Uncle's, have him call Scotland Yard and Thomas, then we could all descend into hell together. Still, I made no move to leave. I studied the portrait closer, removing the smudge from the placard, then gasped. My hand flew to my mouth, fear taking on a whole new bodily form. His name was Jonathan Nathaniel Wadsworth the First. The man both my uncle and brother were named after. Clearly, Father despised his brother. But what did it mean that he'd hung his namesake up in his study, hiding something undoubtedly filled with wretched things? Was it a secret dig at Uncle, blaming him for failing Mother? If the secret passage led to hell, was it Uncle's fault for showing Father the way? What sounded like a soft moan drifted from beyond the painting. I blinked. Pressing my ear against the wall, I listened harder. There was only the stillness of silence, and too many secrets kept. Perhaps I was going mad. The walls couldn't possibly be talking. Or perhaps another helpless victim was trapped wherever that staircase led. My heart thrashed, and my blood roared through my veins. I needed to go down there. I needed to save at least one of Father's victims. I glanced at the clock above the mantel. It was still early. Father and Nathaniel wouldn't be back for hours yet. Or what if it was Nathaniel down there now? What if Father had trapped him? What a fool I'd been. I couldn't expect Father to play by any rules. Just because he'd said he'd gone out with Nathaniel didn't mean my brother actually left the house. He could be tied up and bleeding to death this instant. Without further hesitation, I pushed the painting in, then stepped onto the staircase. A whispered noise greeted me from the seemingly endless depths below. Someone or something was definitely down there. I went to gather my skirts, forgetting I wasn't wearing a blasted dress, then almost lost my footing as I looked down in surprise. I placed one hand against the cool stone wall, allowing it to act as my guide, as I drifted farther into the darkness, my feet flying as fast as they dared over unfamiliar ground. Grabbing an oil lamp or candle would have been wise. I wouldn't dwell on that lack of foresight now. With each step downward, blackness got lighter instead of more suffocating. A lamp must have been left on, for reasons I dare not know. I shuddered, imagining a million and one horrors about to greet me. My silk shoes raced along the stone, light as a feather, as I jumped from one step to the next. I was grateful for the soundlessness they offered. I'd forgotten my boots when I left Uncle's earlier, which seemed like a blessing now. The silken tread would give me time to secure my bearings without revealing myself. As I neared the end of the stairs, a warm glow reached toward me. The very idea something so inviting could herald the entrance of this pit of hell made my skin crawl. Beyond a final bend, before the room came fully into view, I paused with my back pressed against the wall, listening. No human noise sounded, but the soft whirl and churn of steam-driven parts quietly hissed in time to the beat of my heart. It had to be the noise I'd heard. Whirl, churn. Whirl, churn. I closed my eyes. Whatever was making that sound could only be wretched. Whirl, churn. Whirl, churn. The scent of medical elixirs and burnt flesh wafted over to my hiding place, turning my already queasy stomach. I was not anxious to have my curiosity quelled now, but if my brother was being tortured, I needed to cross that final step. I sucked a breath through my mouth, seeking to avoid the sickening scent as much as possible, then peeled myself off the wall. It took two tries, but I finally commanded my body to move into the room. Fear spread its ugly disease throughout my body, like rats carrying the Black Death. A laboratory, far more sinister than anything ever dreamed up in novels, was set out before me. As in Uncle's laboratory, shelves lined the walls, filled with specimen jars 2 and 3 deep. Unlike in my uncle's laboratory, there did not appear to be any order to these specimens, and the wood looked half rotten. I staggered back, bumping into something soft and fleshy on a shelf nearest the wall. The world stopped spinning as I flipped around and saw flesh pulled tightly over a mechanical arm, the skin crudely sewn together with large, jagged stitches. It was as if Father had chopped an arm off at the elbow and replaced some of the bones in the fingers and forearm with metal before covering it with stolen skin. Redness surrounded the needle wounds. Clearly an infection was leaching into the makeshift limb. My corset felt 10 times too tight, and I swayed on my feet, suddenly gasping for breath.
Whirl, churn, whirl, churn.
This couldn't be real. I closed my eyes, praying when I opened them the world would right itself again. But that was a fool's dream. I swallowed the bile rising quickly in my throat. taking in the full gore of the object I'd bumped into. Black squiggly lines of sepsis twisted up the monstrosity. Grey-tipped fingers twitched, the nail beds dried and receding to both metal and bone. Whatever Father was attempting, he'd failed with this thing.
"We'll churn, we'll churn."
Steam erupted from the strange device, forcing dead fingers to flex at regular intervals. I was too shocked to even cover my mouth. At least my heart hadn't lost its senses. I felt its beat throughout my body, pumping so quickly I feared it had knocked me over in its mad rush to flee. Should Father or even Blackburn pop out from one of these dark corners, I'd perish on the spot. I slowly backed away from the mechanical flesh-covered arm, my attention steadily moving about the room, jumping from one horror to the next.
"We'll churn, we'll churn."
Animals in specimen jars were in various states of decay, their flesh and soft tissues breaking apart in liquid hell. Crude abominations were left on tabletops throughout the room. Birds were ripped apart, placed in the mouths of dead cats, scenes of cruelty in nature displayed in sick tribute to the strong. It reminded me of a much darker version of Thomas's personal laboratory. I stepped closer, unable to stop myself from getting a better look at the horrific creations. On another shelf, I spied a ginger beer bottle filled with a dark crimson liquid. I picked it up, turning it one way, then the other. It had dried and coagulated to a gel. Jack made reference to it in one of his letters. He hadn't lied. I exhaled, my breath puffing little white clouds in front of me. It was unbearably cold down here. I rubbed my hands over my arms, walking to a machine near the center of the room, making the soft whirl churn noise, and halted, nearly stumbling over my own feet, when I saw the most sinister thing of all. A human heart sat under a glass case, and soft noises came from a machine, lending an electrical charge to it, causing it to continue pumping. Pressing a hand to my mouth, I forced myself to stay calm and not gag or scream. Liquid-filled tubes ran out of the organ and over the table, towards something I couldn't quite see without moving closer. I peered at the liquid being pushed through the heart with the transfusion apparatus. It was black as oil and stank of sulfur.
"We'll churn, we'll churn."
I swallowed my revulsion. Father had truly lost his mind. Ghosts of his victims surrounded me, warning me to turn back, run away. Or maybe it was my own innate warning system, commanding me into that fight-or-flight state of being. But I couldn't stop myself from inching around the table, any more than some of the slain prostitutes could resist their drink, too compelled to leave without seeing what the heart was pumping its strange life force into. My breath came faster, speeding my pulse, along with the added oxygen coursing through my system, making me both faint and jittery at once. I could hear myself screaming, "No! Turn back! Run!" but couldn't stop moving forward.
"We'll churn, we'll churn."
A closed wooden crate, as long and wide as a coffin, lay on the floor, tubes disappearing into it like worms burrowing into the earth. I did not want to know what that box contained. I paused, feeling the sharp tug of self-preservation dragging me back. But I cut it away, silencing it. I mustn't reach for the lid, but knew that was impossible. I was sick with dread, knowing, somehow just knowing what I was about to uncover, and being unable to walk away without seeing the truth. I watched as my hand shakily reached down, of its own volition, and lifted the creaky lid. Inside the makeshift coffin lay my mother. Her grey flesh, a patchwork of decayed skin with pieces of new, glistened with a sheen of unnatural sweat. The skin over her jaw had rotted away, giving her a permanent sneer. Beneath the grafted skin, something bubbled with artificial life. Father wasn't trying to complete a successful organ transplant. He was trying to bring Mother back from the dead. 5 years after. All the fear I'd been containing shattered like glass. I screamed, letting go of the lid and backing away, bumping into the table. The soft whirl churn of the machines grew louder. Or maybe I was about to pass out. I covered my eyes with my hands, trying to rid myself of the image burned there. It couldn't be. He couldn't have done such a thing. No one, not even the most scientifically mad, would attempt something so ungodly. We'd been so wrong about Jack the Ripper's motives. Even Thomas couldn't have predicted such a thing. I kept trying to drag myself away, prevent my gaze from lingering on the rotten face and decayed body. But I couldn't move. It was as if the horror was so intense it had frozen me in place. Time didn't seem to move. Life outside of this hell didn't exist. But the worst part was my emotions. I was disgusted, through and through. But part of me wanted to finish the work he'd started. I hated that piece of me. Hated that I yearned for my mother back so much I'd condone this madness. Who was more a monster? My father or myself? I was going to be ill. I turned, finally listening to my primal instincts, and ran for the stairs. As I rounded the steps, I slammed into a mass of flesh. Warm flesh! It gripped me back hard, and I screamed again. Only when I lifted my gaze did I breathe a sigh of relief. Oh, thank God! I panted, clutching on for dear life. It's you!
Chapter 28 Jack the Ripper. Wadsworth Residence, Belgrave Square, 9th November, 1888.
Hurry, I urged, tugging my brother toward the staircase with the kind of super strength awarded those in the throes of deathly terror. We must leave before Father comes back. Oh, Nathaniel, he's done terrible things.
It took several moments to realize my brother wasn't moving. He was standing, frozen in place, eyes drinking in our surroundings. I grabbed the front of his long overcoat, shaking him until his wide gaze landed on me. His hair was a wreck, standing out every which way, and it appeared as if he hadn't slept in days. Dark shadows hung beneath his eyes, giving him a sunken expression. He looked no better than the corpse of our dead mother.
Or whatever that creature was in the coffin, that abomination. Another shudder racked my body, almost dropping me to my knees. I couldn't let him see that. He'd never be the same again. Getting a hold of myself, I stood straighter, easing the boning from my ribs. Nathaniel, I said sternly, taking hold of his hand. We must leave here at once. I'll explain on the way to Scotland Yard. Please, let's hurry. I do not wish to meet Father down here.
My brother nodded, seeming too shocked to do much more. I led him toward the stairs, our feet reaching the first blessed steps, when he stopped again. I turned, exasperated, unable to convey the importance of leaving swiftly. If I had to slap him unconscious and drag him up the stairs, so be it.
Nathaniel!
He latched onto my wrist with a vice-like grip, yanking me away from the stairs and deeper into Jack the Ripper's lair. I struggled against him, not understanding his need to be difficult, when he threw his head back and laughed. Goose flesh, too terrified to even erupt, lurked just under my skin, tinkling with the promise of new fear. He tossed me into a chair near the corner of the room, still chuckling to himself. I blinked. My brother had never handled me so roughly before. Father must have drugged him somehow. It was the only explanation. I rubbed my lower back. A bruise was already forming where I'd hit the chair when he'd thrown me into it. He didn't seem to notice. Or care. Nathaniel, I said, trying to sound as calm as possible while he paced in front of me, slapping the side of his head, as if silencing voices only he could hear. Once we leave, I'll fix you a tonic. It'll cure whatever's ailing you. Whatever Father gave you, we'll make better. Uncle will know precisely what to do. You have to trust me, all right? We stick together, always. Isn't that right? Nathaniel stopped laughing, his gaze zeroing in on me with an icy precision. He lowered his hands from the side of his head before cocking it. Right then, he was a predator, in every sense of the word.
Dear, dear sister, I'm afraid you've got it terribly wrong. For once, Father isn't responsible for what's afflicting me. This is all my doing.
I don't understand. You've been taking elixirs yourself? I shuddered. Have you been abusing laudanum too? My brother had been under severe stress. I wouldn't be surprised if he turned to the cure-all tonic. Hallucinations weren't unheard of when it was taken in large doses. It's okay, I said, reaching for him. I can help you. We'll both go to Thornbriar until you're well. Reaching his arms out to either side, he spun proudly in place, acting as if this were all his. No, I shook my head, blinking disbelief away. It couldn't be. Life wouldn't be so cruel. It just wouldn't. Tears pooled in my eyes before rushing down my face. This could not be. I was going to be sick. I lurched forward, clutching my stomach and rocking. Nathaniel paced in front of me, removing a concealed knife from his sleeve. It was roughly 6 or 7 inches in length, the exact size Uncle had predicted Jack the Ripper's weapon to be. He ran his fingers tenderly over the blood-stained blade, then set it on the table with the taxidermy bird being ripped apart. Memories of my brother saving animals, feeding them more than they could hope to eat, crying each time something died in spite of his efforts, filtered into my thoughts. The sweet boy who'd vowed to protect me against our grief-stricken father. This could not be the monster brutalizing women. I would not allow it to be. This lab was not his. These weren't his experiments. He was not the one who'd done this to our mother. Tell me this is a nightmare, Nathaniel. Nathaniel knelt before me, wiping my tears away with such gentleness I sobbed harder. I shook my head again. This was a nightmare. Surely I was sleeping and I'd wake up in Uncle's house and discover this was a terrible dream. What a rotten sister I was, dreaming such things about my beloved brother. The real Nathaniel would never do this. He'd know it would kill me to lose him. He would never do something to hurt me so. He'd never hurt anyone, he just wouldn't. Shh, he cooed, smoothing loose hair from my face.
It's fine now, sister. I promised you everything would be all right. And it is. I helped exonerate Uncle with those letters. Didn't I? Though, admittedly, it was rather fun seeing the chaos a bit of bravado and red ink caused. Couldn't help myself from sending more.
You... what? I felt my nerves unraveling. This can't be real. Nathaniel lost himself in some reverie before shrugging the memory away.
Anyhow, I think I've discovered why you and Mother got sick and Father and I didn't.
He sat on his heels, looking around the room again, exultation and wonder etched into his normally sunny features.
Took some time figuring out, and I wish you would have waited before coming down here. But no matter.
He smiled, patting my hand.
You're here now, and it's perfect. I've worked out the final touch. All that's left is a little prick of blood and a bit of electricity, like in the book. You remember the one, don't you? Our favorite.
Another tear slid down my cheek. I wasn't dreaming. I was sitting in hell. My brother fancied himself Dr. Frankenstein, and I'd never allow our mother to become his monster. You cannot bring Mother back from the dead, Nathaniel. It isn't right. He shoved himself away from me, pacing in the orangey glow of his devil's lab, shaking his head.
What makes it wrong? You, of all people, I thought, would appreciate and understand. This is a breakthrough in science, dear sister. A feat people will speak of for all time. Our name will forever be attached to the unimaginable. Uncle's a short-sighted fool. He wishes only to conduct a successful organ transplant. I've got something much bigger in mind.
Nathaniel nodded, as if it were all the convincing he needed. He punched his fingers into an open palm, exposing cuts on his fingertips. I couldn't recall the last time I'd seen him without gloves on. Now I knew why.
Until now, people didn't believe it could be done. Only authors and scientific visionaries like Galvani dared imagining such a wonder. Now I've accomplished it. Don't you see? This is something worth celebrating. People will never forget the scientific breakthrough I've made.
What of the women you killed? I asked, wringing my hands in my lap. Is it worth celebrating their deaths?
The whores? Why, yes, I think it's doubly worth celebrating now that you mention it.
He stood, hands fisted at his sides, eyes darkening.
Not only have I rid our streets of the blight attacking it, but I've just about brought our beloved mother back from death.
He paced in front of me again, his tone growing more hostile with each step he took.
I've put the wretches out of their misery, and their sacrifice will bring back a good, decent woman. Please inform me of my wrongdoings. Honestly, sister, you make it seem as if I were a common monster preying on the helpless. Mother herself was a God-fearing woman. She will understand.
I had no words. The women he murdered did matter. They weren't rubbish to be tossed away in the streets. They were daughters and wives and mothers and sisters. And they were loved as we'd loved our own mother. How dare he pass such judgment? My brother was so lost to his own fantastical science and sense of justice that he totally missed the mark of what it meant to be human, which sparked something in my brain. What of the gears left inside the bodies? I asked. What sort of message were you sending the police?
Message? There was no intended message. I simply left them where I dropped them.
Nathaniel ran his fingers over his hair, attempting to smooth it down but achieving the opposite. He continued pacing, growing more agitated that I wasn't applauding his unforgivable behavior.
Is that truly all you care about? The blasted gears inside the wretches?
They did not deserve to die, Nathaniel, I whispered.
These women did not deserve to live!
His voice boomed in the small space, making me jump.
Don't you see? These women are a disease. They destroy lives. I offered them a chance at redemption. Death for life.
He walked around to the coffin, then threw the lid back, tears filling his eyes.
Her life was destroyed by disease. Disease spread widely, in part by whores, coughing, and infecting good men. So, no, sister, I won't feel an ounce of sorrow for cleansing our city of a few of them. Would that I could. I'd set the entire East End ablaze and be done with them all. As it stands, I took only what I needed for my experiment.
How very noble of you.
I know.
My brother missed the sarcasm in my tone. He smirked, like it was high time I saw his reasoning.
Truthfully, I'd not intended to kill so many. But the organs shut down before I could work on them. The bolts proved difficult to master in the dark, so I started carrying a medical satchel with ice and inserted the bolts and gears here. Watch.
He hoisted a large luggage case over, unfolding it into a portable table and setting it beside the glass-encased heart in the center of the room. Hand and leg restraints dangled from the edge of it. Nathaniel walked over to a gear on the wall and cranked it until a long, needle-type device hovered above the table. This must be his electrical source. Something that felt a lot like fear stirred in my blood. To my utter horror, he bent down, dragged Mother's corpse onto the makeshift table he'd set up, then shoved her hands and feet into the leather straps. I closed my eyes as her lifeless head lolled to the side, feeling a rolling wave of nausea wash over me. She'd been deceased for 5 years, and I hadn't a clue how she was more than just bones.
I had the foresight to keep Mother partially frozen in a special icebox down here.
Nathaniel stared at the slightly decayed corpse, tenderly pushing her hair aside and answering the question I never asked aloud.
Shame I didn't think of preserving her immediately. It was hard enough sneaking her out of her grave and bringing her here without Father's knowledge. That's where the laudanum came in handy.
Nathaniel dropped a glass specimen jar, then cursed, rousing me from denial. I couldn't reconcile the Nathaniel I'd known all my life with this beastly vision before me. And I couldn't even think about the pains Father would experience should he see our mother now. Mother had been dead enough years that strands of her long black hair fell onto the floor. Nathaniel picked up large pieces of glass, discarding the clumps of hair that caught in them as he tossed them into a rubbish bin. He was completely unaffected by the ghastly scene in front of him, cleaning up his mess as if the corpse of our mother were not rotting on a table before him. Had I not already expelled the contents of my stomach earlier, I'd be doing so this instant. "How did you discover this room?" I gripped my hands together, refusing to look at Mother again. I was so close to losing my nerve, so very close to losing my own sanity. It wouldn't take much to cripple me now.
"Whirl churn, whirl churn."
Nathaniel flicked his attention to me.
"You recall the secret passages in Thornbriar?"
Memories of playing in secret passageways each summer flipped through my mind. Jonathan Nathaniel Wadsworth I was a bit of an eccentric. He'd had more secret passageways built in the cottage estate than were in the Queen's own palace. I nodded.
"A few summers ago I found a map of this property at Thornbriar," he said, shrugging. "Father was already abusing his tonic, so I added extra laudanum to his brandy at night. It wasn't hard to ensure Father remained sedated and unaware of my use of his precious study. What was a bit more opium to an addict?"
"You fed Father opium, knowing the consequences?" Clenching my teeth, I watched my brother walk over to the table with the steam-pumping heart. The urge to cry reared up, but I silenced myself. Nathaniel removed a scalpel from a medical kit under the table, then set it down beside the organ. He took another bag out and placed several locks and bolts out in a row. Little puzzle pieces finally clicked into place. Nathaniel was the only one other than Father who knew how to craft such intricate steam-driven toys. He'd been there with Father nightly as a child, watching and learning from the best. Then there was the matter of his short medical apprenticeship before he switched to studying law. Both of those previous hobbies had aided with his dexterity and precision. While I fought with the image of a loving brother I knew and the monster before me, he lit a burner on the table and heated the metal up, fusing bolts and gears together as if it were second nature. Another memory slid into the forefront of my mind. My brother had been disturbed when he'd discovered I'd snuck into Father's study. I'd thought him worried for me, should our father ever find out I'd been snooping through his things. When in reality, Nathaniel had worried I'd find his secret lab. Nathaniel peered over at me, smiling menacingly as he worked furiously on his newest invention. I watched in silence while he created a metal cage, still unable to think straight. My logical brain knew I had to think and act quickly, but my body felt leaden and crushed by devastation. I couldn't move.
"It's going into Mother's chest cavity. It'll keep her new heart protected."
He nodded several times to himself.
"Think of it as an artificial rib cage of sorts."
My body finally shook itself free of shock. Chills dipped their fingertips into buckets of ice, then darted wildly over my back. Everything made sense. The look of fear when the detective inspector showed up with me at the door after Father's dismissed coachman had been murdered. The same fear-frozen gaze when Superintendent Blackburn interrupted us at the circus. A million clues had been sitting right before me, and I chose to ignore them. My brother was the kind one, the sensitive one. I was the monster, the one who sought to pry secret knowledge from dead flesh. How had I not seen the same curiosity in him? We were composed of the same inheritance. He held the contraption up to the steam-powered heart, measuring it for size, laughing to himself and muttering incoherently. I could not ignore his sick deeds anymore. Once the metal cooled, Nathaniel carefully placed the steam-pumping heart within the ribcage, then fused the metal together with more bolts. He cranked the gear on the wall, adjusting the electrical needle until it touched the metal cage, then stood back, admiring his work. Satisfied with this new grotesque device, he walked over to the table and picked up a syringe, tapping its side with his forefinger.
"You must cease this madness, Nathaniel!"
"What's done is done, sister. Now."
He turned to me, brandishing the syringe as if it were a holy relic.
"I only need a bit of your blood to inject into her heart. Then we'll flip the switch together. If dead frog legs can be made to move by dint of electrical current, we can do the very same on a grander scale. We have the benefit of having more living organs. That's where Galvani and all his intelligence went wrong," he said, pointing to his head. "He should have invested in live tissues for his cadavers. Then he need only add a little voltage. Metal in the gears will help transfer the energy. That's why I'm fusing them with flesh. It's brilliant. You'll see."
I followed his gaze as he admired the electrical needle dangling from the ceiling and disappearing into Mother's chest. This needed to end now. I could not bear to see him do another wretched thing to Mother's body. I allowed all the emotion I was suppressing to seep into my voice. "Please, brother, if you love me, you'll stop this experiment. Mother is dead. She's not coming back." I swallowed hard, tears streaming down my face. I recoiled at the small part of myself wishing to see if it could be done, if he could animate long-dead flesh, if he could bring the mother I missed so much to life again. But the human part of me would never allow it. "You've achieved so much, truly," I said. "I've no doubt you'll surpass any scientist you choose to, but this is not the right path." "Well, churn, well, churn." Nathaniel shook his head, pointing at the steam-driven heart.
"We're so close, sister. We're mere minutes from speaking with Mother. Isn't that what you've wanted?"
He'd shifted from being angry to looking like a sullen child. All he needed to do was stomp his feet and cross his arms to complete his tantrum. Instead, he stood completely still, and that was somehow more eerie than watching him pace like a rabid animal.
"This is all for you!"
he shouted, exploding from his stillness, taking a few giant steps toward me.
"How can you turn this gift away?"
"What?" I wanted to sink to my knees and never get off the ground. My brother had killed all those women because he thought I'd be selfish enough to see only the beauty of the end result. The room spun when I realized the choices now laid out before me. If I called upon Superintendent Blackburn, he'd kill Nathaniel. There would be no asylum or workhouse. No trial. No hope for life. What was I to do about my brother? My best friend? I couldn't stop myself from crying out, from rushing across the room and beating his chest.
"How could you do this?"
I screamed while he stood there, accepting my hysteria with that same frightening stillness.
"How could you believe murdering women would make me happy? What am I going to do with a dead brother and mother? Don't you see? You've ripped us apart. You've killed me. You might as well have torn my heart out too."
The proud gleam in his eyes was replaced by a slow sense of understanding. Whatever madness had gripped him over these last few months seemed to release him from its grasp at last. He staggered back, steadying himself against the table.
I don't know what evil has overtaken me. I'm sorry, Audrey Rose. It will never be enough. But I'm truly sorry."
He allowed me to pound his chest until I grew tired. Tears slowed, marginally, but the ache of what he'd done was a weight I feared would never lift. My brother, my sweet, charming, beloved brother, was Jack the Ripper. Emotions threatened to drown me where I stood, but I fought the flood of them back. I couldn't be consumed by grief yet. I needed to get Nathaniel help. And I needed to get out of the room where my mother was trapped somewhere between life and death. "Let's go, Nathaniel, please," I said, urging him toward the stairs. "We'll have some tea, all right?" It took a moment for him to respond, but after a few breaths, he finally nodded. When I thought he'd finally seen reason, He painfully gripped onto my arm, brandishing the syringe.
Long is the way, and hard, that out of hell leads up to light, dear sister. We must continue our chosen path. It's too late for turning back now.
Chapter 29 Shadow and Blood. Wadsworth Residence, Belgrave Square, 9th November 1888. I clung to my brother in the midst of our shared hell, not wanting to step away and make this nightmare real. Dragging me back across the room, he threw me into a wooden chair next to our mother.
Look what you've done! Now I must tie you up for your own safety, sister!
I sat there immobile, unable to comprehend what he was saying, which cost precious time. Before I could react, he yanked my arms behind the chair and swiftly tied my wrists together. No matter how hard I strained against the rope, there was no escaping my new prison. Nathaniel had secured me so soundly, the tips of my fingers were already turning icy cold. I tugged and pulled, managing only to scrape my skin raw with each panicked attempt to break free of my bonds. I screamed, more out of shock than hurt, as he thrust the syringe into the thin skin on my inner arm.
Stop it, Nathaniel! This is madness! You cannot revive Mother!
My pleas didn't stop him from sinking the plunger in and drawing out my blood. His first attempt failed, and he drove the needle in a second time, ripping a yelp from me. I clenched my teeth and gave up struggling, knowing it wouldn't do any good. He was too far gone. Science had overtaken his humanity. Once he'd filled the glass tube with my blood, he smiled kindly and blotted at my skin with a cotton swab he dabbed in alcohol.
There now. That wasn't so bad, was it? A little prick, no more. Honestly, sister, you act as if I was torturing you. Half the women I freed from their chains of sin didn't cry so much. Have some dignity, would you?
What have you done?
Nathaniel jumped, and I jerked in my chair, startled by the sound of Father's voice at the edge of the stairs. He hadn't shouted, making it all the more terrifying. I cringed, more from habit than from true fear at being caught doing something potentially dangerous. I was strangely less intimidated of Nathaniel, even knowing the atrocities he was capable of, than of Father when he got angry. Perhaps I was simply used to the daily mask of a good son and brother that Nathaniel wore. Father never hid his demons, and maybe that scared me more.
You.
I watched Father's gaze leave my bindings, then linger on the steam-powered heart, the muscle in his jaw twitching ever so slightly, as his attention moved onto who the organ was residing in. Father walked over to the contraption, then lifted one of the tubes carrying the black substance. He followed the tube around the table, halting when he got close to Mother. In that moment, I saw an entirely new side of my father. Here before us was a man who seemed as if he'd been fighting a battle for years, and had just realized it was close to coming to an end. He sucked in a deep breath and turned his attention back on me. His gaze locked onto my arm restraints.
How could you do this, son?
It disturbed me how still we all were. Nathaniel seemed to be stuck to the floor, unable to move his feet even the slightest inch, while Father shifted and quietly stared at his wife with growing horror and denial. Without turning around again, Father said,
Untie your sister. Now.
But Father, I'm so close to waking Mother.
Nathaniel squeezed his eyes shut at the glare Father shot at him.
Very well, then.
Finally, my brother faced me, jaw clenched and eyes still defiant. I followed his gaze, taking in my bound wrists and tear-stained cheeks. He nodded curtly. Once. The heavy charge electrifying the room seemed to build to a crescendo. For a few tense seconds, he glanced between the syringe and our mother, his chest rapidly rising and falling to the same manic beat of the steam-powered heart.
Very well.
He peeled his own fingers away from the syringe, then set it on the table. A sob broke out of my chest, and he turned to me once again. I steeled myself against my fear, as he slowly stepped closer, mumbling.
Be
Be quick about it,
Father barked. Nathaniel took a deep breath, then nodded again, as if comforting himself about something, before finally loosening the ropes at my wrists. I stared at my brother, but he simply hung his head. Whispered voices cried, run, run, but I couldn't force my feet toward the stairs. Father lifted a lock of Mother's hair, his expression wiped clean of all emotion except for one, disgust.
I've never claimed to have succeeded in taking care of either of you. As parents, we only do what we think is best, even if we fail miserably at our duty.
Tears collected in the corners of his eyes as he continued staring at my mother's ruined face. I swallowed, unsure of where to go from here. It seemed my family relationships were not at all what they appeared to be. Nathaniel moved closer to our father and gazed down at Mother. It was too much. I had to leave this place. Monsters were supposed to be scary and ugly. They weren't supposed to hide behind friendly smiles and well-trimmed hair. Goodness, twisted as it might be, was not meant to be locked away in an icy heart and anxious exterior. Grief was not supposed to hide guilt of wrongdoing. In what sort of world could such vast dichotomies coexist? I longed for the comfort of a scalpel between my fingertips and the scent of formalin crisp in the air. I wanted a cadaver that was in need of forensic study to clear my mind. My attention strayed back to my mother. Perhaps I should focus on healing the living from now on. I'd seen enough death to last 10,000 lifetimes. Maybe that's precisely why Uncle and Thomas started experimenting with organ transplants. Thomas. With a sudden jolt, I realized how much I loved him and needed to be with him. He was the only truth left in the world I understood.
Where do you think you're running off to?
Father asked, a demanding edge in his tone. Even now, in the face of this sinister lab and all that was revealed, he wanted to protect me from the outside world. He was too mad to see this place was exactly the kind of thing he'd been keeping me from all my life. A disease much worse than pox or cholera or scarlet fever lived here. Violence and cruelty were something else entirely. I'm going upstairs, and I'm locking Nathaniel in here, I said, sparing my brother one last glance as he petted Mother's hair. Then I'm paying Scotland Yard a visit. It's time each of us owned our truths, no matter how twisted and horrendous they are.
You can't be serious,
Nathaniel gasped, looking to our father for assistance. I moved across the room, studying Father. He seemed torn between wanting to do right and wanting to protect his child. Indecision lifted from his features.
They'll have your brother hanged,
he said quietly.
Could you honestly watch that happen? As a family, have we not suffered enough?
It was an arrow shot straight through my heart, but I couldn't bury the truth. If I didn't go to the police, I'd live 1,000 lifetimes in regret. Those women did not deserve to suffer at all. I couldn't ignore that. Mother would expect me to do the right thing, even if it's brutally hard. I looked at my father, feeling sympathy for him. What must it be like, knowing you raised the devil? It probably felt the same as knowing you sat by a monster day in and day out, never noticing the blackness of his soul. Father gazed at me for a long moment, then nodded. I offered him a weak smile before facing my brother. Even though he'd committed wretched things, I still couldn't find it in my heart to hate him. Perhaps we were all mad.
Wadsworth? Audrey Rose?
A panicked shout rang out from the stairwell, followed by a clatter of feet banging down the stairs. A second later, Thomas dashed into the room, looking rumpled for the second time in his life. He halted before me, his eyes running over my face and body, pausing on my wrists.
You're all right?
I stared at him, unable to answer his question, unable to comprehend he was actually standing here with me. There was a flash of relief in his face before he looked away. He eyed Nathaniel as he moved farther into the room.
I suggest you leave before Scotland Yard comes for you.
He glanced from my father's stunned face to Nathaniel's, his tone as somber as their expressions.
You didn't honestly believe I'd show up unprepared, did you?
Thomas smiled sadly at me.
I'm truly sorry, Audrey Rose. This is one instance I hate being right.
How did you...
Nathaniel began asking.
How did I discover you're our infamous Jack the Ripper?
Thomas interrupted, moving closer to me, sounding more like himself.
It was quite simple, really. Something had been bothering me from the night Wadsworth and I followed your father home from Miss Mary Jane Kelly's flat.
You what?
Father flashed an incredulous look our way.
Apologies, sir. Anyway, there are no such things as coincidences in life, especially when murder is involved. If your lordship was not involved, then who?
Who indeed? Nathaniel muttered, not very impressed.
I studied Superintendent Blackburn this evening, finding his actions genuine. Plus, he was missing the biggest clue I'd come across. When I went over details in my mind, a thought occurred to me. Our murderer might be involving him in our case somehow. Lord Wadsworth and Blackburn, though good leads, were not involved. I could not find a single motive for either of them. Nor could I locate a particular clue I'd unearthed to implicate them.
Thomas moved directly in front of me, planting himself between me and my bloodthirsty brother, who looked as if he was about to rip Thomas's limbs from him.
You, however, were quite curious about the case. Starting that vigilante group was a nice touch,
Thomas said almost appreciatively.
Then there was the pesky matter of those women with connections to your father. Since I'd ruled Lord Wadsworth out, that allowed my mind to stray. Your uncle has this theory, fascinating really, about career murderers killing those they know. At least to start with.
Nathaniel's attention flicked to the blade he'd left near Mother. I gripped onto Thomas's arm, but he wasn't through showing off his deduction skills.
While on my way to Scotland Yard tonight, I remembered seeing drops of blood on our last victim's flayed skin. From the way the drops had fallen, it was obvious it didn't come from Miss Kelly, leading me to deduce our murderer would have sustained injuries of his own.
And how exactly did that lead you here?
Nathaniel asked, moving toward the knife on the table. Thomas was not intimidated, though I was about to shout or jump for the weapon myself.
I recalled seeing cuts on your fingertips a few weeks prior. At the time it didn't seem important enough to comment on. As I mentally walked through your last crime, I finally understood where you were hiding your weapon.
He allowed a knife to fall from the inside of his own overcoat, surprising us all as he held the weapon up.
I was able to replicate the very same wounds on myself. See?
Nathaniel clenched his fists, staring at Thomas like he was a rat that needed to be exterminated immediately.
You must feel extraordinarily clever.
The smug expression normally kissing Thomas's face was absent when his eyes found mine.
The only thing I feel is extraordinarily sorry you've hurt your sister so deeply.
Thomas glanced around the room, then checked his pocket watch.
I wasn't jesting about Scotland Yard. I told them a crime was being committed in this house. Either stay and accept your fate, or start again new. Be the brother Audrey Rose thought you to be, and the son your father deserves.
Father looked upon Thomas with appreciation gleaming in his eyes. Thomas was offering my brother a chance at life. A chance to atone for his sins, and still know the police would be looking for him. It wasn't right, but it was a chance I was willing to take for my family. I took a deep, shuddering breath and faced my brother. Either your reign of terror is over, or your life is over. You decide. Nathaniel released a nervous bark of laughter before his expression turned cold.
Here's a warning for you, dear sister. Should you ever threaten me again, I'll destroy both you and your idiotic friend before he ever dreams of finding me.
Nathaniel,
Father shook his head.
Do not intimidate your sister.
Nathaniel's words stung, but not as badly as the icy look he gave me. All the warmth that made him my brother was absent. Sensing my hurt, Thomas reached for my hand. He was offering me his strength, and I gladly accepted. It was time to be finished with this nightmare. I turned to give my brother one last look, hoping to remember him exactly as he was before I walked away. Only he was no longer watching me with those cold, dead eyes. Grabbing the syringe, he flipped the electrical switch, intent on finishing his unseemly work. Blue and white light.